व्ययाय कलया सित कृष्ण केशा जाता करिष्यति जनानुपलक्ष्य मार्गा धर्मानि महिमोपनिबन्धनानि
When the world was overburdened by the fighting strength of kings who have no faith in God, the Lord, just to diminish the distress of the world, descends with his plenary portion. The Lord comes in his original form with beautiful black hair, and just to expand his transcendental glories, he acts extraordinarily. No one can properly estimate how great he is. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. This verse is especially describing the appearance of Lord Krishna and his immediate expansion, Lord Baladev. Both Lord Krishna and Lord Baladev are one supreme personality of Godhead. The Lord is omnipotent, and he expands himself in innumerable forms and energies, and the whole unit is known as the one supreme Brahman. Such extensions of the Lord are divided into two divisions, namely personal and differential. The personal expansions are called the Vishnu Tattvas, and the differential expansions are called Jiva Tattvas. And as such, expansional activity, Lord Baladev is the first personal expansion of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the Vishnu Purana, as well as in the Mahabharata, both Krishna and Baladev are mentioned as having beautiful black hair, even in their advanced age. The Lord is called Anupalakshamargaha, or in still more technical Vedic terms, Avan Manasa Gocharaha, one who is never to be seen or realized by the limited sense perception of people in general. In the Bhagavad Gita 7.25, it is said by the Lord, Naham prakasha saravasya yogamaya samavrita. In other words, he reserves the right of not being exposed to anyone and everyone. Only the bona fide devotees can know him by his specific symptoms. And out of many, many such symptoms, one symptom is mentioned here in this verse, that the Lord is Sita Krishna Keshaha, or one who is observed always with beautiful black hair. Both Lord Krishna and Lord Baladev have such hair on their heads, and thus, even in advanced age, they appeared like young boys, 16 years old. That is the particular symptom of the personality of Godhead. In the Brahma Samhita, it is stated that although he is the oldest personality among all living entities, he always looks like a new youthful boy. That is the characteristic of a spiritual body. The material body is symptomized by birth, death, old age, and diseases. But the spiritual body is conspicuous by the absence of those symptoms. Living entities who reside in the Vaikuntha lokas, in eternal life and bliss, have the same type of spiritual body, without being affected by any signs of old age. It is described in the Bhagavatam, Canto 6, that the party of Vishnu Dhutas, who came to deliver Ajamil from the clutches of the party of Yamaraj, appeared like youthful boys, corroborating the description in this verse. It is ascertained thus that the spiritual bodies in the Vaikuntha lokas, either of the Lord or of the other inhabitants, are completely distinct from the material bodies of this world. Therefore, when the Lord descends from that world to this world, he descends in his spiritual body of Atmamaya, or internal potency, without any tinge of the Bahirangamaya, or external material energy. The allegation that the impersonal Brahman appears in this material world by accepting a material body is quite absurd. Therefore, the Lord, when he comes here, has not a material body, but a spiritual body. The impersonal Brahmajyoti is only the glaring effulgence of the body of the Lord, and there is no difference in quality between the body of the Lord and the impersonal ray of the Lord, called the Brahmajyoti. Now the question is, why the Lord, who is omnipotent, comes here to diminish the burden created upon the world by the unscrupulous kingly order? Certainly the Lord does not need to come here personally for such purposes, but he actually descends to exhibit his transcendental activities in order to encourage his pure devotees, who want to enjoy life by chanting the glories of the Lord. In Bhagavad Gita 9:13 and 14, it is stated that the Mahatmas, great devotees of the Lord, take pleasure in chanting the activities of the Lord. All Vedic literatures are meant for turning one's attention towards the Lord and his transcendental activities. Thus, the activities of the Lord in his dealings with worldly people create a subject matter for discussion by his pure devotees. Lord Brahma is a exalted, purified devotee of the Lord, whose greatest joy and pleasure is to praise the wonderful qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this wonderful chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, he has described many of the principal incarnations of the Lord as he has personally seen. Lord Brahma had taken birth from the lotus flower, from the navel of Padmanabh Vishnu, at the very, very beginning of the creation of this universe. And Lord Brahma's duration of life is until the very end of the annihilation of this universe. Approximately 311 trillion years is his duration of life. And with his four heads, which are constantly looking in the four directions, he is the witness of what is taking place within this universe. The various incarnations that he is describing are personally seen by Lord Brahma. He is not speaking simply theoretical, but he is actually explaining what he sees, what has happened. This is an eyewitness historical account of the history of the universe. And most important is to understand that he has the capacity to see because of his unalloyed devotion. Premanjana churita bhakti vilochanena. One can see Krishna as he is or his various portions or plenary portions. Only when by the grace of God one's eyes are anointed with the mascara of pure love.
Naham prakasya saravasya yogamaya samavrata mudhoyam nabhijanati.
Krishna explains here that those who are foolish and unintelligent, they are covered by my potency of maya. They cannot understand me as I am.
Avajananti mamudha manusintanam ashrata param bhavam ajananto mamabhuta maheshwaram.
When Krishna appeared in this world in his original beautiful all-attractive form, he was traversing this earth. But yet so many people who saw him took him to be an ordinary person, or perhaps an extraordinary mortal. When Krishna entered into the wrestling arena of Kamsa in Mathura, it is described how everyone was seeing Krishna according to their particular state of consciousness. The whole world is a mirror of our own consciousness. Whatever our particular state of mind is, whatever our desires, Krishna reveals himself accordingly. And this material nature is his energy. Therefore, he reveals the whole material nature according to our particular state of consciousness. If you are envious, you will just see everything as a justification of your envy. If you are a fault finder, you will see faults everywhere and in everything. If you are a pure soul, you will see the opportunity for love and service everywhere and in everything. So therefore, the great Vaishnava Acharyas explain that the real battle to be fought in life is not to be fought against material nature as it is being revealed in the world. It is to fight against the selfish, forgetful tendencies within our own heart. If we can win that battle, we actually conquer the world. Not only the world, we conquer all material existence. If we somehow or other can conquer our own tendency to find faults with others and be envious. Therefore, Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is not telling Arjuna how to fight with his bow and arrows. That is more or less irrelevant to the battle of Kurukshetra. He's telling him how to fight against the enemies within his own mind, how to become a pure devotee of the Lord, how to see the will of Krishna everywhere, and how to see how every opportunity in this existence is a blessing by which we can praise the Lord and serve the Lord. And one who can do that has won the battle of life. And even such great demons as Hiranyakashipu, Ravana, and others, even though they conquer entire universe to whatever extent they can, because they have not subdued their own evil, selfish propensities, they are conquered at every moment by their mind and by their senses. They are conquered at every moment by the threefold miseries of material existence and by the three modes of material nature. Rajagunas, Tamaguna, especially these lower modes, are conquering such persons moment after moment after moment. They lose each battle and ultimately they are not Krishna conscious at the end of life, therefore they lose the war. In this great assembly in Mathura, everyone was seeing Krishna in a different way. For the young ladies of Mathura, they didn't see Krishna as the Almighty God. They saw him as the most handsome young man, Cupid personified, attracting their minds like no one else had ever attracted them. And the mystic yogis were seeing him as the Paramatma within the heart. And the jnanis were seeing him as the impersonal Brahman. And the wrestlers were seeing him as the most powerful, greatest wrestler. And the ordinary people who were very materialistic, they were seeing him as an ordinary materialistic person. Kamsa was seeing him as death personified. The cowherd boys were seeing him as their friend, who they just loved to play with. Nanda Maharaj and the other elderly gopas who were there saw him as a very helpless little child who was somehow or other, with his soft, delicate body, supposed to wrestle against these mighty, mighty powerful athletes, Chanura and Mushtika. There was an uproar of revolt against Kamsa, that this is not fair. They are just children, hardly 12 years old. And they are accustomed to just playing in the pasture fields. And this Chanur and Mushtika, they are trained, powerful wrestlers, athletes, with all terrible mystic powers. This is unjust, it is unfair. Out of their natural parental love for Krishna, they were seeing him in this way. So some are covered by yoga maya directly, and some yoga maya, as it comes through the perverted mind, it becomes mahamaya. Yoga maya increases our love and devotion to Krishna. And by covering certain of his transcendental aspects of power and majesty, to increase the intimacy of our love. But mahamaya takes us away from Krishna, causes us to forget Krishna. And in forgetfulness of Krishna, because the soul is anandamayobhyashat, it is pleasure-seeking, one under the power of mahamaya has no power to resist the forces of material nature trying to attract us to the temporary pleasures of sense gratification. But Lord Brahma, he is seeing Krishna as he is, by the grace of Krishna. And therefore he is explaining the culmination of all the incarnations of the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is in its original form, Lord Krishna. And it is being described the beautiful features of his body. Specifically here, he is explaining his black hair. Krishna and Balaram had beautiful, beautiful black hair. We cannot imagine why such emphasis is being put on Krishna's black hair. Simply because we have not seen with eyes of love what is his black hair. One such hair from his head is more beautiful, more lustrous than all the jewels and beauty of Swargaloka and all the heavenly abodes. It is so nicely explained here how Krishna, his body is spiritual. Therefore, it is not in any way influenced by the powers of time. In this world, people become attracted to each other's black hairs. But there's not so much attraction. When a man loves a woman, or a woman loves a man, or a parent loves a child,
when they see the shining, glistening hair of a youth, it is very, very attractive. But then when the hair falls out into your sabji or your dal, then it's simply disgusting. Practically the same hair that you're thinking is so beautiful and infatuating your senses and you're dreaming about at night, when you find it in your dal the next day, it practically makes you vomit with disgust. So the hair itself is not very beautiful. And after some time goes on, the hair turns dull, becomes from shiny black when you were a youth to dull black, and then you have to put all sorts of oils to try to make it shiny again, and then you have to get hair conditioners and shampoos and all these things to try to somehow fight against the laws of nature to keep your hair beautiful. But eventually it just turns gray, white, and nobody's attracted to gray and white hair. People who are looking for wisdom sometimes are a little attracted because they think this is the opulence of renunciation. But no one is sensually attracted to white, gray's hairs. And then soon they start falling out and there's no hairs. And some people, to fight against the laws of nature, they get hair dyes to somehow or other make their hair black. And then it's a whole complication because some of your hairs are black and some of them are white. And you have to make the black that you're making black match the black that's already black. So many complications trying to look beautiful in this world. But this is very popular, hair dyes. And then men, in India, they dye their mustaches black and their beards black, just so that people think, oh, such nice black hair. But Krishna, he is not subjected to the influences and powers of time. It is explained here on the battle... On the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he was over 100 years old, and yet not one gray hair, not one wrinkle or crinkle on his flesh, his spiritual body. He looked like he was hardly 16 years old, a beautiful young boy. Navayovanam cha. He is beyond the modes of material nature, beyond the influence. Krishna explained in Gita that he is time. He controls the whole material nature, maya adhyakshena prakriti, and he also controls time itself. He is never under the control. But the jivatmas within this material existence, they are always under the control of Krishna's nature. We cannot resist. Therefore, we find that Nityo nityanam chetanas chetanam nam eko bahunam yubhidati kaman. The Upanishads describe there is one supreme eternal who is the master and lord of everything. And everyone, all the infinitesimal eternals who appear in plural forms are expansions of him, and they are always under his control. The jivatma is always under the control of Krishna. That can never be changed. The question is whether we want to become under the control of his spiritual energy or his material energy. Material energy means under the control of time. Janma, mrityu, jara, vyadi. Birth, old age, disease, and death. Under the control of the three modes of material nature. Tribir, gunamalaya, bhavaya. Being forced helplessly to act and behave in so many ways according to the modes of ignorance, passion, and goodness. Being under the control of Ariatmaka, Aribhautaka, Aridaivaka kleshas, the miseries caused by one's own body and mind, the miseries caused by other living entities, their miseries caused by natural disturbances. In the spiritual world, we are under the control of Krishna's internal potency, which means that whatever Krishna wills, we voluntarily simply want to perform that activity. We have no separate interest. We have no false ego. We identify ourselves as the servant of the Lord, meant for the pleasure of the Lord. Maharaj Chitraketu, he didn't mind whether he was to be put into the body of a demon like Vritrasura, or whether he was to go back to Godhead. He was indifferent to all these situations. He was simply anxious to serve the Lord in any way the Lord so pleased. And the gopis of Braja, they didn't mind having to go to hell for all eternity if it would give Krishna even one moment of relief from his headache. The pure devotees of the Lord are under the potency of the Lord's beauty and charm, and therefore they will do anything for him, with no consideration of what the outcome will be, because their only desire is Krishna's happiness. That is the purest, eternal form of love. And such devotees, they are given in the spiritual world bodies of the same nature as Krishna himself. Satchidananda vigraha. No one grows old. No one gets diseased in the spiritual world. Whatever you are, you are. In this material world, as people get old, they start looking through their family photo albums to see what they looked like when they were nice. Just see, this is what I looked like when I was young. And everyone's saying, oh yeah, you were so beautiful, you were so handsome, you were so strong. And this was grandpa, grandfather. Now he's dead and gone. And this is grandmother, she's dead and gone. And this is your mother and father, they're also practically dead and gone. But just see how nice they are. Now we're just shriveled up, suffering due to invalidity. But in those, just look what I used to be. So people take great pleasure in looking at photos of the past. It gives them some solace that something in life I was. Now I'm nothing, but I was something. It's death. If they look to the future, they just see death fast approaching. They see more and more bodily aches and pains increasing with every day. So they look to the past and think, oh, those were the good old days. But in the spiritual world, there's no need for photo albums, because everyone looks the same eternally. In fact, everyone's eternally becoming more beautiful. Just as Krishna is ever increasing, the spirit soul is ever increasing, ever youthful, and everyone is increasing their beauty, their charm. Why? Because in the spiritual world, people don't want to be beautiful to attract people to themselves. In this material world, that's why people are beautiful. So that people are attracted to me. Women do not put on all, whatever they put on all over their faces, all different colors and everything. They don't do it for any reason, but people will think I'm beautiful. And I will enjoy being seen as very beautiful. But in the spiritual world, people are the most beautiful. But their beauty is to give pleasure to Krishna, to attract Krishna. No one wants to be attractive themselves. Everyone simply wants to decorate themselves in such a way that it gives pleasure to Krishna. that Krishna sees how I'm trying so many ways just to make him happy. We see the residents of Vrindavan, how they decorate themselves so nicely with all kinds of dresses and jewels and cosmetics even. But it's not to attract people to themselves. It's simply to give pleasure to Krishna. It is a selfless act of unmotivated, uninterrupted, pure devotion to the Lord for His satisfaction. This world is conducted under the powers of the three modes of material nature. Tamaguna is the mode of ignorance, Rajaguna is passion, and Sattvaguna is goodness. And the Srimad Bhagavatam explains very nicely how the influence of Rajaguna invokes creation and growth. And therefore we find the guna avatar of Rajaguna is Lord Brahma. He is the creator. Actually, he's not the creator. He's the instrument of creation. Visharaka, he's the secondary creator. He creates material manifestations as an instrument of the Lord's sweet will. But in order for there to be creation, there must be passion. We read in Srimad Bhagavatam how Lord Brahma creates. First he creates various sons, and then he deputes some of his sons to be prajapatis, such as Daksha. And these prajapatis, they are meant to procreate. They are meant to get married, to have lots of sex, and to have lots of children. And these various prajapatis, Kashyapa Muni, Daksha, and so many others, the way they procreate is something wonderful. They can give birth to any species of life they desire. You have no power. We are just very infinite. We're insignificant. Humans are very, very less intelligent as far as these things go. When a man and woman in this world come together for a child, they don't know. They know it's going to be a human. That's one thing they know for sure. It will be a human, but whether it's a boy, whether it's a girl, whether it's going to be healthy, whether it's going to be diseased, they don't really know. They have some ideas that it will look like me due to the genes and the DNAs and all these other chemicals. So, the prajapatis, they decide to come together with their wife, let us give birth to frogs, or to insects, or to snakes. So they give birth to the insects and the snakes and the frogs and the horses and the crocodiles, whoever they want, that is their power. But it is all through Rajaguna. It is all through the impulse of sex that manifests itself in various ways. So that is creation. And from creation there is growth. And then there is the Tamaguna. That is the influence which creates destruction. Lord Shiva is the guna avatar. When he dances his mystical dance, he can destroy all the worlds. He can set everything on fire by the glance of his third eye. It is described at that time of dissolution, Lord Shiva opens his third eye, the eye of mystic power, and he just creates fire. And then he dances around and everything begins to burn and burn and burn. When Cupid, Kamadev, agitated Lord Shiva, he just opened that third eye for a second and Kamadev was burned to ashes. So that is destruction. And destruction is not something that only takes place at the end of creation or at the dissolution of various times of pralaya, but also destruction, Lord Shiva's influence as the destroyer is happening at every moment. Because moment after moment, through the power of time, we are all being destroyed. And in the material world, none of these gunas can be isolated and pure. They are all interacting and mixed with each other. And goodness is the mode of sustenance or maintenance, which is the most difficult. Everyone knows to create something is difficult. To destroy something is not so difficult. But to maintain something is very difficult. It's like a mother and father. To create a child is not so difficult. In fact, in Kali Yuga, it usually happens by accident. So it's not very difficult. In previous times and among civilized people, it is done, garbhodan samskara, very, very systematically, devotionally planned. You have a child in a certain way. But it is not difficult to have a child. After all, the ants, the mosquitoes, they are not highly learned souls, but they are having children all over the place. And the rats in Bombay, there's no family planning, they're just having. They don't even care whether they have a child or not. They just want to enjoy, and then children come. And then all of us have to suffer. But human existence is meant to plan everything according to what is best for society and what is best for our spiritual growth. But it is not difficult to create children. It is quite simple. And to destroy children is very easy. It's against the law of nature as well as the state, but it's very easy. You have a baby, he starts crying, mother within a second can kill the child. Usually they don't even give it a chance to become a baby. In the Western countries, 2/3 of the children are killed right in the womb. They give birth to the child within their own body, and then they think there will be some inconvenience in having this child. Our family will have to have more money, and I'll have to change diapers, and I don't like to change diapers. And I like to have a career, and I won't be able to work as hard and make as much money, so let me just kill this child. So what is the difficulty? What is the problem? You just go to someone and they just, as they say, they remove the excess tissue from your body, and murder is performed. So it's very easy to create a child and very easy to destroy a child. At any stage. And modern civilization is just making it easier. Now there's so many wonderful technologies to destroy. Now we have guns, pistols and rifles and bombs where you can just destroy anything, anyone, at any time, if you so desire. No difficulty. But to maintain is very difficult. Every mother and father knows what it's like maintaining a child throughout its life. First, keeping it from eating all bad things. Children, I have never been a father like this, but I have seen from my experience, these little children, somehow or other, anamai, their ultimate understanding of the truth is to put it in their mouth. They're just putting everything in their mouths, like little Kumbhakarnas. They're just trying to eat everything. This is how your baby looks to the sannyasis. They're just trying to devour everything they see. And the mothers, mother and father are just running around, no, 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 don't do this, don't eat that, keep that out of your mouth. And whatever there is, if there's one thing that's dangerous, they will just start crawling right to that. They have some mystic power. We have seen where the parents, they just, everything in the room, they try to make it soft and nice and there's no dangers. And if one little thing is forgotten in one drawer under two other drawers, the child will go right to that. How they know it's there. And the parents are always running around, trying to somehow or other keep their child alive. Maintenance is very difficult. And then after they grow up a little older, then it becomes even more difficult. Giving them education, trying to get them to study, trying to make sure they have the right kinds of friends so they don't become crazy. So many anxieties to maintain a child. It's easy to just kill it. So maintenance is very difficult. But to speak of maintenance of the universe, to create the universe and destroy the universe is not much problem, but to maintain it is very difficult. Therefore, only Vishnu himself can do it. He cannot empower anyone else to do so. No one has that power. But in the spiritual world, it is the place of Shuddha Sattva. Shuddha Sattva means pure goodness without any tinge of mixture of passion and ignorance, which essentially means eternal. If there's no influence of Rajaguna and no influence of Tamaguna, that means there's no birth and there's no death. That means there's no growth and there's no deterioration. Shuddha Sattva means eternally, eternity. No influence of the material modes. And that is the spiritual world. And because there is no Rajaguna or Tamaguna in Vaikuntha, therefore everyone has an eternal, youthful, beautiful body. Srila Prabhupada gives the example when Ajamil was on his deathbed. He was actually a nice brahmachari for some time, but sometimes brahmacharis go off the track. And he became allured by a low-class prostitute. Actually, he was a brahmachari, and then he got married to a very nice lady, a very good Brahmin wife. And he had a very good Brahmin father. He had all good training, and he had a very nice ashram, but he became attracted to sense gratification. And then, to maintain his sense gratification, he lost all of his intelligence, and he became a sinful, terrible person. And at the time of his death, the Yamadutas came, sent by Yamaraj, to take him away. And they were terrible-looking people. The Yamadutas, when they appear before you, Yamaraj is beautiful, but the Yamadutas, in this society today, the most popular films are horror films. You know what is horror? That means they're supposed to scare you. And they spend lakhs of rupees just putting on makeup on one person just to make them fearful. Huh? And people, when they see, they pay their hard-earned money to go in and see the monster or this terrible person. And they all the children go, "Oh, he's so scary. Let us pay our money to become, to suffer being fearful." In fact, people are so perverted, they take pleasure in becoming afraid. That's how boring life is. Can you imagine? Life is so dry and boring, and there's just no taste, that they have to pay their hard-earned money just to somehow or other stimulate some emotion of fear. And then after they become so afraid, then they're just in anxiety all the time. Wherever they go to bed and they keep the lights on, hoping to just in case that person comes to get me at night. Or they're walking down the street and they're looking this way or that way, hoping he doesn't come. Right? Children are like that. After they see the monster, they sleep in the bed with their parents. I don't want to sleep alone. I'm afraid of the monster. And yet the parents, they're encouraging, let us go to see. This is because people are looking for ras. In Krishna are all rasas. He is Rasaraj. But when we see the wonderful qualities of Krishna, they not only bring pleasure, but they bring fearlessness to our heart. But in this material world, the pleasures we're looking for due to the absence of Krishna are so ridiculously perverted. Anyways, however much money, even the greatest, I don't know what they're called, makeup artists, whether it's in Hollywood or Bollywood, they will never ever be able to compare to the ghastly features of the Yamadutas. When you see the Yamadutas, then that is the ultimate culmination of ugly, fearful characteristics. And when the Yamadutas come at the time of death, it's not a movie. It's not that you think, oh, the monster's coming, but the movie will be over in a few minutes, and I could stop seeing this monster. It's not a movie on television where if it becomes too fearful, you can turn off the station or turn on another channel. When the Yamadutas come, they're coming for you. And it's a live performance. And you're not just watching the movie. You are the star of the movie. They've come all the way down, all the way from Yamaloka just for you. So when Ajamil saw the Yamadutas coming, he called out the name of his son, Narayan. But he called the name of the Lord, because Krishna is none different than his name. And he did not chant offensively. He chanted innocently. He chanted in an offenseless way. And because he chanted in that way, in desperation, in fact, the Vishnu Dutas came. And these Vishnu Dutas, they were so young-looking and so beautiful. They had the same youthful characteristics of Narayan. They didn't look like the police constables of Bombay, just old guys with sticks. They were actually young. They looked like children, beautiful children. And they were smiling, and they had weapons. And the Yamadutas, when they saw the Vishnu Dutas, they understood that they were defeated. And the Vishnu Dutas said, "Yamadutas, go away. He has come. You have no right." So they had to go away. Because these are the qualities of one who surrenders to Krishna. In the spiritual world, we take a body of the same nature as Krishna. And why everyone likes youth in this world? Because it is our very nature to be eternally youthful.
And when Krishna appeared in this world, he came not only himself, but with a whole entourage of devotees from Goloka Vrindavan, who were all eternally youthful. The cowherd boys, the gopis, they did not age. They were beautiful little children their whole lives. And Nanda and Yashoda, they grew to be a certain age just so they could have parental affection for Krishna, and then they never aged a day after that. How is that possible? Because their existence is simply for the pleasure of Krishna. Srila Prabhupada explains here that the Mayavadi philosophers, their terrible misconception is that the Supreme Absolute Truth is ultimately impersonal, and out of mercy, when that impersonal existence comes into this material world just to establish dharma, then the impersonal takes a personal form temporarily in the mode of goodness. They accept the mode of goodness, that the Lord's body is purely in the mode of goodness, but it is a material form, because they do not see how there can be any qualities in the existence of eternity. And therefore there can be no love, no real love, because love is not something that is conditional for some time, and then we outgrow it. Or we advance beyond it. Love is eternal. And it is explained that when Krishna appears in this world, he appears to attract our hearts back to our eternal personal relationships with him. And Srila Prabhupada so wonderfully explains in this purport how factually all of the purposes of the Lord's incarnation, as far as relieving the burden of the earth and killing the demons and protecting the devotees and reestablishing the principles of religion, the Lord can fulfill all of those by his various energies. He has inconceivable energies, and his energies can do anything. The Lord especially comes to this world for the highest purpose, to enact his beautiful pastimes. And when the Lord enacts his beautiful pastimes, the record is established within the universe so that his devotees can find infinite joy at any time, in any place, hearing these pastimes, chanting the glories of these pastimes, or remembering them within their hearts. The devotees find great joy and bliss when they come together to describe the Lord's pastimes. The Lord comes to give pleasure to his devotees. And also he enacts these beautiful leelas just to attract the conditioned souls back to the spiritual world through the process of hearing these leelas. The wonderful pastimes of the Lord are of a spiritual nature. The Lord exists within the sound vibration of his pastimes. And by hearing these wonderful pastimes, by chanting, by remembering, gradually all our desires become diverted away from the mortal pleasures of this world of death, and our desires again become attracted to Krishna in the spiritual world. So this is the wonderful process that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu so much stressed. The Vedas, the Mahabharata, the Puranas, they are filled with innumerable beautiful, beautiful pastimes and activities of the Lord and His devotees. And we should keep our minds always absorbed in this subject matter. It is the nature of the soul to try to find pleasure in hearing various news or stories. Look in this world. How many newspapers are selling? Just pastimes of the craziest people. People enjoy it. And the worse the news, the more they enjoy it. As a social custom, they say, oh, how terrible this is. But actually, they would be bored reading the newspaper if terrible disasters were not happening all the time. Because people are like flies. Disasters. And all of the movies and all of the television, how much is it capturing people's minds? In all of these books and novels and science fiction and amusement parks and discotheques and bars and permit rooms, or for people a little more in the mode of goodness, they may go to the opera or the ballet in the West. Here they go to some, I don't know what they do. But so many things. Just to keep the mind busy and excited in hearing wonderful stories and seeing wonderful stories. Because the soul is always thirsting to hear the glories of the Lord's pastimes. But we have become so diseased that we prefer, even when we become devotees, we sometimes prefer to hear or to see the television, or to see the cinema, to see these useless, mundane stories over coming to hear Srimad Bhagavatam Katha. How is that possible? It becomes like medicine. Due to our conditioning ourselves, Yamaraj conditions. If you act like a hog in your life, you have to take your next birth as a hog. But before you get the hog body, first, little by little, they start feeding you little pieces of stool, just so you start developing the taste. Gradually, you become a genuine, authorized stool eater. Then you become, now you are ready. Now you have qualified yourself. Become a hog. And you're very proud. Now I'm a bona fide hog. And I can eat stool as much as I like. So it's an acquired taste. It's not a natural taste. So similarly, the natural taste is to simply be in ecstasy, hearing and chanting the glories and the pastimes of the Lord. But birth after birth after birth after birth, we have conditioning ourselves to acquire the taste for material subject matter. And we're so addicted and so accustomed to the kind of music, to the kind of entertainment, the kind of everything else that people are enjoying, that when we hear the beautiful, spotless, ecstatic lila of the Lord, we're thinking, oh, what am I missing? And we have to control our senses to somehow or other not do those other things. It is explained that Srimad Bhagavatam, the beautiful stories that are told here, for those who are in a conditioned state, it is medicine. It is the medicine that will cure and ultimately purify the disease to take pleasure in any other subject matter of this world. But for the Paramhamsas, it is the Paramhamsa Samhita. It is the ultimate joy, the ultimate ecstasy to just hear and chant the glories of the Bhagavatam. Param drisva nivartate. As our heart becomes pure, we cannot stop thinking of Bhagavatam. We cannot stop talking about Bhagavatam.
No one can keep us from coming to hear the glories of Bhagavatam. It is our constitutional position. So Krishna appears, especially in this wonderful form, along with his brother Baladev, just to establish the ultimate loving pastimes of the spiritual world of Goloka Vrindavan. And Shukadev Goswami has spoken, a drop of the ocean of those pastimes that Krishna enacted within this world. And Srila Vedavyas has put it in the literary form of Srimad Bhagavatam. And we should be very much willing to show our gratitude to Krishna by accepting his mercy. Krishna only appears in his original form of Govinda, along with Baladev, once every day of Brahma. After so many billions of years, what is it, over 4,300,000,000 years, he appears in this form. And Srila Prabhupada, he explains that Krishna very recently appeared, only 5,000 years ago. Now, for the material scientists and anthropologists and geologists, 5,000 years is before recorded history. That's so long ago, they cannot even calculate. But Srila Prabhupada explains, just recently Krishna came. Only 5,000 years ago. Krishna comes every Dwapara Yuga, as the Yuga avatar. But he comes as an avatar of Vishnu. But only once in the day of Brahma does he come in his original form. The form of Vrindavan, Vrindavan Chandra, who is the source of all avatars. And we have such a good fortune. Krishna comes to this world only for our sake, and the way we can show our appreciation for Krishna's mercy is to simply accept his mercy by absorbing our minds and hearing his glories and the association of devotees. And that is why it is said in Bhagavatam, Srinvatam Sukata Krishna Punya Sravana Kirtana Hridyantasto Yabadrani Vidunoti Suritsitam. That when we take pleasure in hearing the beautiful stories of Krishna's pastimes and the wonderful words of his teachings, Krishna is so happy that we're taking pleasure in hearing about him, that seeing that he cleanses everything that is unwanted from the core of our hearts. So we must learn to take pleasure in this wonderful subject matter. And we must learn to give pleasure to others through this wonderful subject matter. And this is really the love and friendship amongst devotees, to always be sharing Krishna with each other. Rupa Goswami explains the six loving exchanges. To give prasad, to take prasad. Prasad is Krishna. We're just giving Krishna and taking Krishna and receiving Krishna. To reveal one's mind and to have another reveal one's mind to you. But how do devotees reveal their minds? They don't reveal their minds with gossip or rumors. This is not what Rupa Goswami is talking about. Some devotees think like this. Rupa Goswami says I should reveal my mind. Do you know what she did yesterday? I saw, I know. Do you know what he did? I know. I have to reveal my mind. It's Rupa Goswami's instruction. We will make, because we're both wearing kantimala and tilak, and we're both wearing saris, or we're both wearing dhotis, therefore by discussing these topics, we will make spiritual advancement. But that is not. Revealing mind means in Krishna consciousness. What did you read today? Oh, I read about Krishna killing Denugasura. I read about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu dancing at Ratha Yatra. And this way this is revealing minds, exchanging pastimes and stories. What is your service? Can I help you in your service? Yes, what is your service? Can I help you in your service? Or if we're having some difficulty, can you help me to remember Krishna? Can you help me to be a better disciple? This is my problem, please help me. This is revealing mind. It is all centered around Krishna. It is sharing Krishna Katha and giving gifts and receiving gifts. The ultimate gift is Krishna. Whatever gifts we give or receive should help that person come closer to Krishna. We should not give gifts that are simply going to give sense gratification to each other. All the materialistic people are giving each other gifts like that. Whatever gift, it should help that person to have a deeper relationship with Krishna. Oh, this is your service? You have deities at your house? Let me give you some arti paraphernalia so you can use it in Krishna's service. Or let me give you this set of Srimad Bhagavatams. These are gifts that increase our devotion. They can be utilized in our service. These are the six loving exchanges between devotees. Always keeping Krishna amongst us. And by gratefully receiving Krishna's gift, who has given himself to us, through his devotees, that is the perfect path back home, back to Godhead. Krishna has performed so many wonderful leelas, given so many teachings, and the more we understand these things, the more our consciousness becomes absorbed, the more we become detached from material life. And also, the more we naturally become attracted to Krishna, who has appeared within his name. The more excited, enthused, and ecstatic we become to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Is there any questions? Yes.
Maharaj, you mentioned that Krishna appears as an avatar of Vishnu in every Dwapara Yuga, and it's only once in the day of Brahma that he appears as Vrindavan Chandra. So what is the difference in Krishna as an avatar of Vishnu and Krishna as Vrindavan Chandra?
Because when Krishna comes once in a day of Brahma, he reveals the highest intimacy of the loving relationships that he has with the Brijabasis of Goloka Vrindavan. And he invites everyone to enter into that leela. Krishna is the source of all avatars. In that original form, otherwise Krishna comes as a Yuga avatar to establish the recommended process of religion for that age. But when he comes as Govinda Madi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami, he comes to reveal the supreme treasure of the love of the eternal world of Braj Bhumi, where you can love him purely in the mood of Dasyaras, Sakyaras, Vatsalyaras, and Madhuryaras. In the Leela of Ram, there is Madhurya Ras and Vatsalya Ras also, but it is with reverence. It is with an understanding of the supremacy of Ram. But Vrindavan, these rasas are untinged by any reverential conception, because the overwhelming influence of the intimacy of the love between the devotee and Krishna causes him to forget his subordinate position to the Lord. Therefore, it is a very rare and extraordinary lila that takes place once in the day of Brahma. Krishna actually gives the darshan of the highest world of Goloka Vrindavan. Yes?
Maharaj, you mentioned about the spiritual body. Is it possible to have the spiritual body once become a devotee, in the sense that by eating prasadam and chanting Maha Mantra, to what extent and what stage can one, you know, sort of...
Yes, but there is variegated under realizations and manifestations of spiritual body. Anything that is exclusively used in the service of Krishna is purely spiritual. In this world, everything is potentially spiritual. If your body is only used for Krishna's service, your body is spiritual. If it is only eating Krishna's prasad, it is a spiritual body. But it is a spiritual body within this world. And through very high realizations of Krishna and His mercy, you can even understand what is your original spiritual body in the spiritual world while living in this spiritual body of the material world. Just like we read about Narottam Das Thakur. He was, when living in Vrindavan under Lokanath Goswami, Jiva Goswami, one time he was in a trance of ecstatic love while chanting the Lord's names, and his original body as a gopi appeared within his heart, and he started participating in pastimes. And Champaklata, one of the Sakhi friends of Srimati Radharani, she asked him, please boil some milk so that I can offer it to Radha and Krishna. So she made a fire, and started boiling the milk, and the milk started boiling over. And this milk was so treasured, it was the milk of the cows of Braja, not a drop should be wasted. So in great haste, this gopi picked up the pot without any padding for the hands to protect it from the heat, and lifted the milk and took it off the fire. And then the gopi saw that her hands were burnt. And he came out of his meditation. And he saw that his earthly body of Narottam Das Thakur, but his hands were burnt. So how is that? These are the intimate leelas of those who have achieved the highest mercy of Lord Krishna. But still, as long as we are in this body, in this material world, the bodies are subjected to the laws of nature. Although they are purely spiritual because they are used in Krishna's service, they are still under the powers of the laws of nature. So you may realize your eternal spiritual body from within your heart, but ultimately this body will grow old, get diseased, and die. And because you've used it wholeheartedly in Krishna's service, at the time of death, then you return to the spiritual world, back to Godhead. And there, no more these temporary bodies. There, your original spiritual body is revealed for all eternity.
When you spiritualize your body, as far as healing is concerned, maybe old age is okay, can it heal itself? Can it heal itself? At a spiritual level, since there is no disease, like there is something like spiritual healing. So at a spiritual level, can body heal itself?
But that is not spiritual. Yeah. What people call spiritual is just a subtle form of material. People say spiritual healing. It is usually on the level of psychic powers. real spiritual healing means to become completely healed and by being detached from all material enjoyment. That is spiritual healing.
My next question is, in the beginning of your talk you mentioned about state of consciousness reflecting the world around. But isn't consciousness what you see and seen? It's not just your consciousness which is reflected. I mean, you're not the only one existing.
You may see, but everyone sees it according to their consciousness. Just like Srila Prabhupada explained, during the Second World War in Calcutta, the Japanese were bombing Calcutta. And bombs were going off. And everyone was running to bomb shelters. And Prabhupada was cooking puris for the deities. And everyone, "Abhai, Abhai, let us go, the bombs are dropping." And the sirens, air raid sounds. Prabhupada said, "You go, let me make my offering to Krishna." And he said, "I saw that Krishna is coming in the form of these bombs." So they're seeing the same bomb, but because Prabhupada's Krishna conscious, he's seeing Krishna coming in the form of the bomb. And everyone is seeing Yamaraj coming in the form of the bomb. Death. Destruction. So you may see the same thing, but at the same time, according to your consciousness, you're seeing it completely differently. Krishna says in Gita, "For one who sees me everywhere and everything in me, he's never lost, nor am I ever lost to him." Devotee sees Krishna as an opportunity for service everywhere and in everything. And materialistic people are just seeing everything either in the mood of being attracted or averse according to their senses and their mind. I like this. I don't like this. Devotees aren't concerned with liking or not liking. They're concerned with service. That is love. Prabhupada says, in this world, a woman sees a man and says, "Oh, he is so nice." And a man sees a woman and says, "Oh, she is so nice." But a pure devotee simply sees that they are not nice for me, they are nice for Krishna. Whether a person is young or old, they are nice for Krishna. Whereas devotees see everything in relationship to Krishna's pleasure. And a materialist sees everything in relationship to my own pleasure or my loved one's pleasure. A nationalist, everything in the world sees it according to their nationalistic concern and interprets everything according to their nationalistic concern. Correct? A devotee sees everything in relationship to serving Krishna and loving Krishna and pleasing Krishna. So in that way, we may see the same thing, but we see it altogether different. And this takes place naturally as our heart becomes Krishna conscious through hearing the glories of the Lord and chanting the holy name.
Krishna, 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 Krishna.
Prabhupada says, while in this world, we must respect the etiquette of this world. And although the Lord's pastimes are eternal, still being in this world, we have certain time schedules.